today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
There's a couple of paths that I see here. Number one, you have to learn the technical. Like you need to be able to understand your camera, the technical, the settings, exposure. You need to get that stuff like flawlessly. It needs to be second nature. Next, add the pressure to it, right? So now do that in the pressure cooker. That is like the next step. Now you're into the milestone. You're into this next stage of your growth as an artist, where now you need to stop looking at things as technical problems and start looking at things that have meaning. How do you look for moment? How do you find nuance? How do you piece together details? How do you compose in a way that has the impact? That's where you become a good wedding photographer.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we are going to learn what exactly to focus on when just getting started in photography. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back, everybody, to this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and we have quite a doozy of an episode for you today. You might have seen the name, you might have seen the thumbnail for this episode and said, hey, I know that guy. Today we are having back on the show Brian Caparici, who is a wedding photographer who has built, an amazing photography studio. And we're actually going to hear in the interview how he actually didn't get into photography for the photography and how that made him a better photographer. But he is also the founder of Sprout Studio, which is an all-in-one CRM for photographers. So it's going to help you with everything from inquiries, leads, bookings, managing your money, and even your client image gallery as well. You can link all that together. So wonderful stuff. Really excited. I mean, Brian is just an A-plus guy. I'm excited for this episode. We start off by talking about Clubhouse. Maybe by the time we recorded it, it was very, very, very new. Now it's been a few extra weeks and, there's been more people on it. So maybe you already know about it. But if you haven't, it's a really interesting app that Brian's going to tell you all about. And with that, let's go ahead and get into this interview with Brian Caparici. A few weeks ago, I saw one of your posts on Facebook pop up saying, hey, who's on Clubhouse, this new social media app, right? And you were doing a talk on wedding photography, and it was like this hangout for wedding photographers. So right away, I thought, I got to get in on this. I got to join this new social media platform, and I have to learn, of course, from the master, Brian Caparici, here. And this whole thing, while I was there, just like blew my mind. It was very immersive, and it was very entertaining. So for those who, I guess, don't know yet, who haven't heard of it, can you kind of fill them in on what is Clubhouse and why it's so different? Because you've totally become an evangelist for this new app, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
For sure, yeah. It's a ton of fun. I mean, I think the timing of Clubhouse, and we can back up and I can talk about what specifically it is, but like, let's just acknowledge for a moment the timing of it was perfect. I mean, with where we are right now, or where we've come in 2020, where we are in 2021, we as humans are seeking connection. Like we're seeking the ability to collaborate and talk and network and like be together. And we can't in our industry, we can't do it, at WPPI workshops, conventions, like it's just, that doesn't exist. So what do? We all go to Facebook and we chat on Facebook, but it just, there's a certain something missing, when you just do like this text-based communication. So Clubhouse is basically like being at a convention. It's a virtual convention, more or less, right? You have this like main hallway, which is like the main, news feed, like we're used to on Facebook, where you just can kind of sort of scroll through the hallway. And what you're scrolling through are a bunch of different rooms of all the people that you follow. And they're basically in a room having conversations. So imagine you're at WPPI, you're walking down the hallway and you see a room and you're like, oh, that's cool. Raymond's in that room. And it says that they're talking about marketing. So you kind of can like, you can step into the room and you can just kind of like hang out in the audience and you can listen to these 10 people on stage who are talking about marketing. And if you want to add something to the conversation, you raise your hand, you go up on stage, you can add, and then you go back to the audience. Or if you have a question, you raise your hand, ask the question, go back into the audience. And that's basically what Clubhouse is. It's an audio only social media tool that just allows us to connect, to converse, to have conversations, to teach, to learn, to network. It's a ton of fun. And there's so many great conversations happening over there and so many great ways to connect with each other as photographers, with other, you know, wedding professionals, or just to like hang out and learn things that you want to learn. If you want to go learn about Bitcoin, or you want to go, like, you know, last night Tesla was on there, you know what I mean? Like doing all these, it's just like you can really do anything, but it's just an opportunity to dive in and to connect in an audio only format. So it takes away that fear that so many people have of, like, you know, Zoom fatigue or being on video and all that. You just kind of put your AirPods on and you can listen and connect while you're doing something else.
And that's exactly what I was doing. I put in the AirPods, I went, started walking on the treadmill, and I was like, this feels totally different than everything else that we've had before. And even like with live, you know, even if you join some sort of live conversation on Facebook, there's this element that you're still watching somebody who is live, mm-hmm. and that's it. And even like if you leave a comment or whatever, you're still kind of behind this veil of a computer. But with Clubhouse, like, you can actually talk to these people. And I got to say, the other day, there was a chat room with Joe Greer, who is big into film photography on YouTube. And I thought to myself, I was like, whoa, like, here's Joe Greer. Like, imagine if I just, you know, walked into the store and there was Joe Greer, you know, and here he was talking about film. And it's a really new platform, obviously, but it's a lot of fun. And I had a great time connecting with you and Devin, who was there as well. So that was a great time. And I'm glad to get you back on the show today, obviously. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of longtime listeners who are going to remember that you were back on the show in it was episode 60. So this is like 2017. So it's been a long time. Wow.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, but for those who maybe haven't been listening that long, I'm sure that a few people have maybe just got a camera over the holidays for Christmas. Can you reintroduce yourself to them as far as who you are and how photography plays a role in your life?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, congratulations on, I mean, you know, you with your podcast, Raymond, it's like, running a podcast is a lot of work, and I know that because we have a podcast.
You know that. Yeah, I mean, you're up to episode 450. Yeah. Like, this is bananas.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool and it's fun and it's great, but, like, you know, what maybe a lot of listeners don't know is, like, getting past episode 20 is a huge milestone, and then past 50 is a huge milestone, and then past 100 is a huge milestone. Like, 1% of podcasts make it there. So the fact that we had a chance to talk back in 2017 on episode 60, and now we're still talking again today. I don't know what episode number this is going to be, but my quick math says, it's at least 200. So, I mean, congratulations to you on that.
For sure.
Anyways, yes. Yeah, so about me. So I've been a professional wedding and portrait photographer for 15 years. I'm here in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. And I've been full-time making a living, supporting my family as a sole income provider for 15 years. My wife and I, we have three kids. She's a stay-at-home mom. And you know, the living that we have and the life we have is because of the money I've made with my camera. And I've always had a passion for the business side of photography, which I think makes me a bit of a weirdo in our space, because I'm not like the starving artist type. You know, I actually do like the business side, the marketing, the selling, the pricing, so on and so forth. And so I've been teaching business to photographers for about 10 years. I've written a handful of books. The one book that I wrote called Pricing for Profits actually used in colleges and universities as a textbook. To teach, you know, up and coming photographers how to price themselves. So the business side is something I have a huge passion for, and I really love. And I love to help photographers, because most photographers get into it, photography, because they love photography, not necessarily because they're like, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. maybe I'll make money with my camera. It's like, no, they think of it the other way. You know, they just stumble into it. So I like to be there to help them, to give them guidance, to give them advice, to give them, you know, strategies that have worked, because I've been there and I've done it for 15 years. And that all led me about 6 or 7 years ago to start and to be the founder of what's now Sprout Studio. So it's software that helps photographers run their business. So we give them the knowledge and the strategies and the insight on the education side, but then we also have a tool that they can use to actually execute these things and run their business. So that's me in 60 seconds, Raymond.
Man, yeah, you could go on so much longer just because of the amount of accomplishments that you have, not only from your photographic capabilities and the awards that you've won there, but as you're saying, I think helping out photographers now, it seems, has kind of become like your mission, you know? And this past year, I've seen you take a huge step forward in the amount of content that you come out with and the types of content that you come out with, specifically geared towards helping those other photographers. And I know that there's a lot of other, systems out there for the business side of things. But yours is obviously focused on photographers, and all the content that you come out with is as well. And it's great to see your experience, you know, kind of shine through in all of that. But before you got to this point to where you are today, there was a beginning, right? And this, yes. Since this is the Beginner Photography Podcast, I want to know more about that. So what was it in the beginning what was it that first told you, you know what, I think photography is going to play a large role in my life here? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
So the funny thing, and I don't talk about this too much, but the funny thing about my beginning in photography was, I'll back up to, I guess it would have been like 2005. I was in school for computer science. I was going to university for computer science. And because I was like the computer science guy, of course, like you're the guy that everyone goes to for computer help and questions and whatever, because you know everything apparently. So I actually got a summer job working for another photographer. I didn't know anything about photography. I had no interest. I got a job working for this other photographer who did like gymnastics events. So we would go to different gymnastics events around Ontario, and he would sort of deploy a crew of photographers to photograph the gymnasts on the floors and at the various sort of stations. And then they would all bring it back to me at this like booth that we had set up. And because, again, I was the computer guy, this is early days of digital too, right? 2005 was a very different day and age than it is now. So we would basically
like single core processors on computers.
It was insane.
Time. Yeah.
So back then, for reference, for anyone that, you know, we're used to Lightroom and all these things now, that didn't even exist. Like Lightroom wasn't around then. I know it sounds like we actually carved the pictures on pieces of stone. So we used a software called was it ACDC or ACD or OCD? It was some software like that. The logo was orange. I can still picture it. Anyways, they would all bring them back. I would offload them onto the computers. I would do selections, and then I would get them ready for a slideshow that the parents could then come back and look at the photos. They would pick which ones they wanted, and we would print them on site for them right then and there. So it was like this on-site event photography thing. Again, I was doing the computer side, not the photography side. So my entrepreneurial brain got spinning because I've always been entrepreneurial in my thinking. And him and I started this side company called Memories in Motion. And we did what we call, and we thought we were fancy back then, we called it digital memory preservation, which is what a mouthful. But again, this is like early days of digital. So the fact that we could do these like fancy slideshows or DVD, these advanced DVD menus with like buttons that you could click to play different slideshows. It was all the rage back then, right? So we did that and did pretty well doing that. And him and I just kind of went two different directions. But I was loving what we were doing. He was always the photography side. I was always the tech side. And so when we split, I was like, well, I want to keep running this company. But I don't know anything about photography. So I basically took over the company. I had a company called Memories in Motion, and I walked into Henry's, a camera store here locally, and I said, hey, so I have a photography business. I need to buy a camera because I don't know what I'm doing.
Right away.
So that was like, that was basically, you know, the start. And then from there, obviously, I fell in love with photography through the discovery of it. But for me, I started it as an entrepreneur first because I saw the opportunity. I saw the excitement of running my own thing. And photography just happened to be the space that I fell into. And then over the next 15 years, I've obviously fallen in love with photography and the creative side and the ability to make images and say something with my camera. But I started as an entrepreneur first and then found photography. So it's an interesting dynamic because, again, like I said earlier, most photographers start in the opposite direction, right? Of like, yes, loving photography and then wanting to start a business. I was the opposite. So those were kind of like the early days. And I think I attribute that to the success that I've been able to achieve in my own way as a photographer, because, you know, my first year of shooting weddings, I booked 32 weddings of shooting weddings. And it's like, and I believe it's not because necessarily I was a better photographer than anyone, even though I think I, you know, I did a pretty good job as a photographer. It was my marketing skills, my selling skills, just the fact that I looked at what I did as an entrepreneur, as a business person, that's what got me to where I was.
So you decided right from the beginning, once you bought that camera, you were like, you had decided to go into weddings at that point, or were you still doing some sports?
I did two seasons of sports. I did that. And I think I remember one specific time where, so I would do like the, you know, like the team and individual picture where you'd have like a basketball under your arm and be like, geez,
of course, yeah,
and then do that like 5,000 times, like on a weekend. Cause I would do all the local, I did all the local basketball, the local soccer associations. We did tennis, we did baseball. Like I did everything. And then we ended up doing live events and things like that. And it was good. It was fine. Like it was, I was enjoying it. It was able to help me learn photography and build the business and build the systems and build the team and do all those things. Again, I was like an 18-year-old kid too. So here I was like, holy cow. But I was never fulfilled. I've never been a sports guy myself. And I wasn't really fulfilled creatively doing that because it's assembly line photography. There's nothing wrong with it, but just for me, I didn't love it. So I kind of quickly transitioned away from that and into weddings after like a year or two type of thing. And yeah, that first year of shooting weddings, I booked 32 weddings.
So let's talk about that progression for you as far as that learning curve, because I don't want to get these words mixed up. As you said, when it comes to like assembly line type photos, once you kind of figure out your settings, it's just rinse and repeat all day long.
Yep.
Whereas a wedding, entirely different. You're constantly changing settings. So was there a big learning curve for you there? Or by the time you had got into weddings, were you already pretty proficient with the camera to where you were able to get in there?
Yeah, I think it was like the way that I see things and analyze things and break things down and understand them. I mean, that's what's gotten me to where I am now with Sprout. But I even think back then there were signs of that where there was this like, you know, mass production element to like to the sports photography, but I always looked at it differently. I always really looked at it as challenges. How can I do things differently? I didn't want to do the same kind of work that like, you know, your Justins was doing or like, you know, those kinds of things. So I did always look at it a little bit more creatively than probably others may have at the time. And in doing so, I did have to learn and figure out lighting and understand settings. And then also because we were doing live events, you know, photographing a basketball tournament or a baseball tournament and all that, there was this training of being able to catch the right moment and understand settings and learn shutter speeds and how they interact with different things and aperture and what you want to get in focus. And so there was an element. And back then too, thinking back, what camera would have I had back in the day? Canon something, I don't know, the Canon 30D or maybe even the Canon 20D. Mm-hmm. It's like you couldn't shoot over ISO, you know, 800 without like having golf balls everywhere in your picture, right? So like, you know, you had to really understand the technical side. And because I was very technical in my thinking, I did learn that stuff quickly. Now I second shot weddings those first 2 years as I was doing the sports photography. So I learned a lot through that. I was basically working like, you know, 3 full-time jobs, right? Like running the photography business itself. I was still a student at the time still. And then also every weekend I was second shooting with a local photographer. So I was shooting, you know, 20 weddings every summer, learning as a second shooter, as an assistant, just figuring out how things go. So by the time I did actually break out and do my own weddings, I had probably 50 weddings under my belt that I had second shot for. So I learned through that.
Of course, experience. Yeah, that's got to be one of the best ways to learn. I think, you know, anybody can attest to that. We can read books all day on technicals and settings and whatnot, but it's not until you actually get behind the camera and you do these things that you realize, oh, either this works or this doesn't work.
Yep.
So when you had first went to those, you know, few weddings as a second, was there anything that really caught you off guard and you struggled with as far as the photography goes?
I would say the biggest challenge about weddings, and anyone that's photographed weddings, you know, can empathize with this. It's just like the fast pace of a wedding. You know, that's not only photographically is it constantly changing, right? Like you're in a bride's house and you're by a window backlit, and then all of a sudden you're front lit, and then all of a sudden you're this, and then you turn around, there's a flower girl that looks cute and you need to get that shot, and then you go downstairs in the basement and it's pitch dark, and then you got to go up here and do it. It's like you're constantly changing. So not only is there like continual technical challenges that you have to be able to think about, but it happens like lightning fast, right? Like it's, and then the pace and then the stress of the wedding and things are getting heated and dad's yelling and this is this and the little girl's crying and like all these things that kind of, for me, that was the biggest thing. It's like I could, and I see this even now in photographers, newer photographers, you know, like understanding the technical is obviously that's the first step, like getting over those things. But then from there, it's like, yeah, but now figure out that technical in a pressure cooker, right? Like mm-hmm. figure those things out under that stress of it. So for me, that was the biggest, because I admittedly kind of went in feeling really confident in myself as a technical photographer, thinking like, oh, I got this. This is no problem. Like I know the stuff off the back of my hand because I was technical. Mm-hmm. But then adding the pressure to that, it changes the game. So that was probably the biggest change for me.
I have a similar story. I went to film school, so I learned all the technicals of cinematography to learn to light for movies. And obviously, in a production, you're going to have all the equipment that you need to be able to, you know, light to technically perfect settings,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
So when I transitioned into wedding photography, I thought, this is easy. Like, I know exactly what to do here. I know all the settings that I need to do if it's low light and all this stuff. And that first wedding, I still hate to share the story, but the entire first dance, I shot it at half a second just to make
love
sure,
because
I was like, I got to keep that ISO low. You know, you got to have, you know, nice, beautiful grain. yeah, they didn't use any of those photos. In fact, that couple used a photo of the first dance that another guest took on their cell phone.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Of their
yeah.
first dance as their profile picture. And I knew at that moment. It was right then at that moment that I realized, oh man, settings are nowhere near as important as so many other factors, you know, like moment, you know. So in a time where new photographers are coming in right now, especially right after the holidays, lots of people get cameras, you know, for the holidays and whatnot. There's a lot of things that we can be focusing on, and it can be very overwhelming because quickly you realize, oh, this is really more than just pressing a button.
Yeah.
So for those photographers who are worried, what are some of the things that they should be focusing on right now at this stage to kind of avoid potential overwhelm? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com, and as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
I would say, like, take it a step at a time. I think that's probably the biggest mistake that I see photographers make, especially in those early days. Actually, interestingly enough, anecdotally, I was in a clubhouse room last night just kind of hanging out with you know, 60 or 70 other photographers. And there was a conversation that there was a newer photographer. She was, you know, I looked at her Instagram. Her work was beautiful on her Instagram. She was still a student, and she was kind of going on about how she had just finished paying for like a styled shoot, to participate in this styled shoot. And like, I was like, I raised my hand and just started asking questions and discussing with her because genuinely I don't quite understand it. I get that like it's a thing, but like my biggest challenge was like, so what are you trying to show off in doing something like this? Because you're in this perfectly styled, expensive setup with zero pressure or timelines or limitations or anything. Like, it doesn't really show off what you can do as a photographer. It just shows that you know how to press the button and what settings to use and that you know how to edit a picture. And that kind of comes back to what we're talking about here, in my opinion. It's really easy to kind of let our ego, and again, I was there, so I'm speaking from experience, I'm not criticizing, to let our egos get ahead of us in the sense of like, oh yeah, I know this stuff, like I'm gonna just start. It's like, you need to walk before you run, you need to crawl before you walk, you know what I'm saying? Like, you need to kind of take it bit by bit. And I think to try and get into like, you know, I hear these conversations now where photographers who are so early in their career are talking about ideal client, and that's not the kind of luxury wedding I want to have, and this and that. And it's just like, guys, like, you get a handful of seasons under your belt just like shooting weddings first. Like, you need to understand, because not only, there's a couple of paths that I see here. Number one, like we talked about, you have to learn the technical. Like, you need to be able to understand your camera, the technical, the settings, exposure. You need to get that stuff like flawlessly off the back of your hand. With it needs to be second nature. That's the first part. As soon as you get over that, you're in a good place, right? Next, add the pressure to it, right? So now do that in the pressure cooker. So that's the next thing. And then once you can get over that, so you can show up to a wedding and you can technically get perfection. That is like the next step. Now you're into the milestone. You're into this next stage of your growth as an artist, where now you need to stop looking at things as technical problems and start looking at things that have meaning. So how do you look? You talked about moment. How do you look for moment? How do you find nuance? How do you piece together details? How do you compose in a way that has the impact? Like, there's all these things, and those are so far away from the technical capabilities that we have as photographers. That's where you become a good wedding photographer, when you can look at things and go beyond the technical. So that would be like the path that I would recommend a photographer going through. And that's why I'm not a fan of the styled shoot concept, because I don't think that it teaches any of those things. It just teaches that you know how to press the button and get the right settings. And yes, you need to know that stuff, but that shouldn't be what you're presenting as your ability as a photographer, because that's not reproducible on a wedding day. So that would be kind of the path that I would recommend, is like, you know, number one, make sure that you get technically confident. Number two, make sure that you can perform in that technically confident way under the pressure of a wedding day. And then number three, forget about all that stuff. As soon as it becomes second nature and it becomes habitual, then you need to just trust your mind and your body and like your muscle memory to do those things. And then now you need to be focusing on the things that actually make an impact in the work that we do, which is nuance and moment and storytelling and cohesion and consistency and all those kinds of things. And then once you figure that out, once you get beyond that, then it's all about, okay, great. So now you can tell a story, you can capture a moment, you can see these things, you can predict when like the laugh is going to be the best, you can predict when this moment's going to happen, you can react, you can see. Then now you need to take the camera and everything away from it and make sure that you can integrate yourself on a wedding day in a way that is relatable, that you can connect with people, that you can create an environment that elicits real emotion. You can make people feel at ease. You can make interactions to orchestrate moments sometimes, or you can make interactions where you actually are invisible in the moment, so moments can happen without your interest. So that's like the next step of growth. And I'm not sure what would come next, but like, those are like the few main steps that I would say. It's a journey, right? Like, it's a journey. It's a stepping ladder that you need to walk up, and so many photographers try and jump to that last rung, and it's like, you got to do the work. You got to put the time in. You got to do the work.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. Have you seen that YouTube channel, Unbox Therapy? It centers around the idea that we as consumers love the experience of opening up something new. In fact, Apple spends more than any other electronics company on using premium packaging because they know that it will elevate your experience. So why are you still sending your images with Google Drive or Dropbox? You can create a beautiful delivery experience in your photography with CloudSpot. From easy-to-use uploads to grandma-proof downloads and everything in between, CloudSpot will give your clients a premium experience. You can get started for free by heading over to deliverphotos.com today. That's deliverphotos.com and sign up for CloudSpot today. Now, let's get back to today's interview. So, I want to say to the whole stylized shoot type deal right there, I'm torn on this because in the same sense, like, this is not something that I would do. I would never find myself, especially paying for a stylized shoot. I could see myself helping out other vendors doing some sort of stylized shoot, obviously with them. But we're talking about the sense of, like, it's a new photographer and they're looking to gain quote-unquote experience, build a portfolio by doing this. And two things that I hear most from new photographers is that, A, they don't have enough time to practice photography, and B, they don't have anybody to practice with. So when it comes to these stylized shoots, like, I see where that comes from. I see the desire to go to these things, but you're right. They're missing, like, such this big step of, it's not just the technicals. It's being able to replicate this under pressure in a real world environment. So for those who, you know, are worried about time, for those who are worried about not having the people to photograph, if doing, you know, stylized shoots isn't the way to go, is there anything else that you could recommend maybe to build practice and possibly grow their portfolio as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think this all sits in this foundation of slowing down. I think it, and again, like, I believe me, I've been there, so I understand. So I'm not criticizing, but I'm more trying to encourage through experience.
Of course, this idea
that, like, you know, we all want to pick up the camera, we figure out this technical thing, and then we want to start running. But it's like, success in this industry and growth and longevity and sustainability are not going to come overnight. Like, you know, every overnight success is an overnight success 10 years in the making. Like, that's it's never an overnight success. And so the pull to want those quick results is so, like, we can feel it. It's there, but try to pause that feeling and slow yourself down and say, it's okay that it takes time to build these things up. It's okay that you don't get this right away. It's okay that you can't pay $300, get a perfect portfolio, and then book these luxury brides the next day. Like, that's not going to happen. That's not a sustainable way to build a business. So my advice would be to get in and almost follow the similar path to what I just talked about with myself, where get in and figure out the technical. Like, you don't necessarily need to have a bride in front of your camera or a groom in front of your camera to figure out the technical. I mean, go out there and just shoot whatever you can around you. Shoot, do self portraits, go out and photograph nature, like, do whatever you can just to, like, you need to be, the camera needs to be an extension of your eyes, of your mind, of your vision. Your hand almost needs to not even, like, it needs to be, again, like, muscle memory. So whatever you can do just to, like, put in the hours, put in the time, that's fine. Beyond that, now if you want to start understanding the nuances of applying those skills and applying that muscle memory to people, find people to photograph them. Like, that would be, I don't think we need to have this, like, luxury boho bride with this beautiful barn wedding and blah, blah, blah in order for us to practice that, because that's not when you want to practice. You want to make mistakes when you're photographing your kids or when you're photographing, like, the neighbor's kids or when you're out, you know, whatever you're doing to practice photographing people, that's when you want to make mistakes, not when you're paying $500 to be at this perfectly styled shoot. So do that. And then even once you've gotten that, now you need to start second shooting. I am such an advocate for like the concept of interning. I think it's so important and it's so underutilized in our industry. It's almost utilized in a way that like, hey, I want a second shoot for you so I can build a portfolio. No, the whole point of second shooting is not to build a portfolio. If you can, great. If you can build a relationship with a photographer and do that, wonderful. But the point of it is to learn the ropes, to understand what it's like, to put in your hours, to put in your hours. Who is it that writes about the 10,000 hour rule? In order to get good at something, you got to put in 10,000 hours. That's what we got to do as photographers. If you want to photograph weddings, get out there and photograph weddings, but do it and learn and be humble about it and be hungry for it and be willing to make mistakes and be willing to carry someone else's bags. Because you know that they did that 10 years ago. I did that 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Like, so you have to put in the time. And I think that's the best way to do it. Are you going to be able to shoot luxury weddings next year if you go that path? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But you're going to learn. You're going to get in there and you're going to practice. You're going to know what it's like. You're going to be able to talk with another photographer. You're going to see what you like. You're going to see what you don't like. You're going to have experience practicing with your camera. You're going to have experience engaging with a couple, engaging with family members, understanding the nuances of a wedding day, and you'll be able to go from there. It's a slower path, but it's a path that gives you success in the long term.
I know photographer Sam Hurd uses just like posing. It's like sketching dolls, you know, those wooden dolls that you use to practice sketching with, to practice posing and technicals at home, which I think is it's a great tip. And I love to share with everybody whenever I got the chance. But, you know, what you said there about being an overnight success is really an overnight success 10 years in the making. Mm-hmm. Really struck a chord with me because I know, if there's one thing that 2020, this past year, had taught us, it's that many people realized how important it is to have some sort of side income. And I saw so many people say, you know, I have this camera, I want to use it to capture beautiful photos and bring in some additional income, but you can't start a business in a pandemic, right? There's that big but, which is really unfortunate because, as you know, there are just so many things that you can do in a photography business that do not require you to shoot. Now, as I said earlier, you've been at the forefront of helping photographers make it through this pandemic better as a business than they were before. So can you share what are some of the things that photographers can be doing today to build a stronger business and prepare themselves so that, you know, when we get back to 100%, they can go at it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I think when you think about the skill set that you as a photographer have, those skills are so transferable to other spaces. So, you know, early days of the pandemic, that was something because our audience at Sprout is largely professional wedding and portrait photographers. And obviously weddings and portraits weren't happening because we couldn't be doing these things. Yeah. So, you know, everyone around us was basically, sorry, you'll have to excuse my kids yelling in the background. That's like pandemic lifestyle of a dad here. early days, you know, we're trying to figure out how our customers, how our industry, our community can still make a living, because that's what they depend on, is making a living from photography. So you think about the skill set that you have as a photographer and, you know, well, you understand, you know, composition, you understand direction, you understand lighting, you know, the tech side of photography, you know, what kind of compression or perspective different lenses give, how the settings interact with each other. Like, we understand those things intuitively. But you also understand probably social media better than the average person. You know, if you were to put the average restaurant owner next to the average photographer, I would argue that the average photographer probably knows a lot more about the visual aesthetic of Instagram than that restaurant owner might. So there's things like that. Like, you as a photographer know a lot more about video than the average, you know, hotel owner or the average, local business. There's so many things, like even website building. Like, most photographers are whizzes at Squarespace. They can get in there and figure that stuff out like it's nobody's business. To the average, you know, the average garden shop or nursery, they don't know the first thing about building websites. Like, that's not what they do. They don't live in that space. So when I say all that, I basically just say, what are the different skill sets that you have as a photographer that actually aren't photography? And really, when you think about it, there's a lot. Like, there's a lot that you know that, like, doesn't involve you having a camera in your hand and a client in front of the camera. Even to that extent, I mean, if you're a wedding photographer or if you've photographed weddings, what else can you photograph? Think about that for a minute. Because, you know, you're used to photographing, you know, shoes on the wedding day and the dress and jewelry and macro shots and finding nice lighting for the bouquet and all those things. Well, what other businesses right now could use those kinds of services? Like, you know, could you offer your photography services to a restaurant and say, hey, so you've had to pivot to order it to having online ordering for all of your food and all of your menu items. And your cell phone snaps aren't really selling your stuff that well. So how about I help you? Like, is there a way that I can help you? Or how about the same thing for a nursery or for like anyone, right? So I kind of, we went through like, you know, dozens and dozens of examples, but that's just the idea. I don't know if that's the direction you wanted me to go, Raymond, but like, that's just the idea of like, how can you bring the skill set that you inherently have because of your role as a photographer? How can you have that, you know, sort of like blow out the sides of the box that we've defined for ourselves, which, you know, puts us in this little thing of like, I have camera in hand, I have clients in front of camera, that's how I make money. How can we now think outside of that box and look for other ways that we can be making a living with the skill set that we have, and almost in a way drop the label photographer?
Interesting. So this still gives us a way, I can see, not only to still continue photography with being able to help somebody else, but also kind of grow our place and our stance in the community that we have here local, 100%. Because you're going to have to reach out to business owners to get approved for something like this.
The thing that was interesting about all that too, Raymond, is like in that space where when I was teaching a lot of that stuff early days, we made a whole course for it. We have a whole website dedicated just to it. It's called First Aid for Photographers. We did all this stuff. And what I thought was so interesting is that there were so many photographers who were now building relationships with local folks that they otherwise would never have had the chance to meet, to build relationships with, to network with. And now that they've kind of, you know, like when you go to war with somebody, you know, when you're in the front line at war with somebody, like you, when you're in the trenches, like you, the relationship and the bond that you have beyond that will last a lifetime. And I don't mean to be so dramatic to say that like that's equivalent to what we went through with the pandemic, but like when you're there and you're helping people and you're sharing in like the challenges and you're just doing everything you can to like to help your fellow business out, to help your fellow entrepreneurs out, and to build these relationships. And when you can be there as that guide for people, they will never forget that. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that to be like, well, help people so that, you know, they can pay you when the pandemic's done. I don't mean that, but I mean like genuinely, that's like networking 101. Like, how do you build relationships with people? Right now is a perfect time for us to be doing those kinds of things where we can add value into other businesses and other people's lives. We can use our skill set for the greater good. And all the while there's revenue opportunity, there's networking opportunity, there's new relationships opportunity. So, you know, it's a win-win-win for everybody, really.
I see. While I love that idea, and part of me feels like that is maybe just a bit too advanced for those who might be listening to this right now, is that's that seems like something that's going to be perhaps for somebody who's a little bit more established. Maybe they have some sort of systems in place. Maybe they have a bit of a I don't want to say Rolodex because nobody uses a Rolodex anymore, but like a network of people locally that maybe they could reach out to. What about those who, putting ourselves in the shoes of somebody who maybe they lost their job or they were laid off during the pandemic and they thought, okay, the camera is the way that I have to make money right now. What are some of those initial things? Like, what would you say are the two or the three most important pillars in a business that somebody could be working on now to build before even starting shooting?
Okay, I see. So I'll attack this from a couple angles. The first one is, let's say that you're kind of pretty fresh to photography, right? Like you're pretty new in it. I would say, again, I would encourage the idea that like you've still got to go to school. Like you've still got to learn the things, right? You've still got to figure out the things. Again, it's the idea that like, just because you picked up a camera and took some nice pictures of a flower doesn't mean that you should be booking couples to shoot their wedding, right? So it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it might now might be a perfect time to just like go to school and figure that, like, I mean like literally, not literally go to school, but like figure these things out, become a student, become someone that becomes hungry and is seeking the education to better the craft that they're looking to get into. So, you know, go through the tutorials, listen to the podcast, watch the YouTube videos, practice in your home, like do what you can to just refine that skill of photography. Now, let's say that you've kind of gotten past that already, or maybe once you do get past that, the next would be, and this is like very much my own path, is like learn the business side, like dive in and figure out, understand pricing and marketing and selling and the way that we as people buy and the psychology of it, and just, you know, the way that business works, like understand accounting and how that stuff is going to work, because you're going to need to know that stuff. I've talked to so many photographers that just built their business not on a solid foundation, and they kick themselves every single time. So if you can avoid that, now is a good time to, again, like go to school, like quote unquote, if you're listening, go to school and learn those business things and practice them and ask questions and become curious about those kinds of topics. So those would be two things, is just like adapt this like hungry mindset, this curious, this intrigued mindset of learning and growing and listening, both as a creative and as an entrepreneur. And then the other angle that I wanted just to take this on is I don't think that it's too early for anyone to explore these ways of helping other folks. You know, even if you've just kind of been dabbling with your camera and, you know, you got this cool fancy camera and you can take some, you know, decent pictures of your kids or whatever it is, it's like, there's no reason you couldn't reach out. Like the teachings, Raymond, that I was giving photographers back early days of the pandemic, it had nothing to do with the fact that like they may already know this person. Like I wasn't like, okay, go through your past client list and do this for only past clients. It's like, no, I want you to like, this, what I taught them is I said, hop in your car virtually, like don't go in your car, but like in your mind, close your eyes, go and get in your car and start driving around your town. And as you're driving around your town, look left, look right. Don't look down, because I don't know what that would do, but like, don't, I don't know, look up, but like, look left and right, okay? Like, look left and right. And like, how can you help whatever you see around you? And I give examples of like, drive through your downtown. What kinds of businesses are there? Oh, there's like a yoga studio. There's a this. There's a small oil shop. There's a this. How can you help those people? Reach out to them. You like 95% of the ideas that we brainstormed early days had nothing to do with anyone that these people already knew. These were all new relationships. So even if you don't have that, like, you know, Rolodex that you were talking about, I still don't think it's a bad idea. If you can take a decent picture, why couldn't you reach out to the local restaurant and say, hey, I'd love to come photograph your chefs. I'd love to get you some photographs of your chefs, because that like disgusting cell phone picture that you have on your website that they're like standing up against this wall and they look like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
That's not doing you any justice to like making your visual presence look really beautiful to potential customers right now. Why don't I come out there and I'll photograph them for you? Like you don't have to have, they don't have to have any idea who you are in order for you to offer something like that. What restaurant owner is going to be like, oh, you know what? I actually like those really crappy pictures that I have. Like they're going to be like, you want to come photograph them? Now you get a new relationship, you get experience. And if, as long as you're better than them, you've got nothing to lose. You know what I'm saying? So that would be, I do think that it's a tactic that can still work, even if you are very, very early on in your growth trajectory as a photographer.
A few years ago, I read a book. And of course, now for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, but it was an investing book. And the sentiment was that the future is cheap if you pay for it now, right? And I think that that really, that point is being driven home here with like, wow, it would be great if, you know, you did lose your job and you were able to transition flawlessly into a full-time career as a photographer. But unfortunately, that happening is not going to happen. There's just so many variables. There's just, you need to have built something, you know, and you talked about that foundation earlier, about those photographers who were wishing that they built a better foundation. Would you mind to share any real life examples as far as maybe what that piece of the foundation was that they wish was better?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about, in my opinion, it's all about investing. Like I think about what I did early days to build the business that I had versus what I saw other photographers doing. And I think that the big difference is like I invested, and I don't mean money. I mean, you could invest money as well, but I invested time. Like I I was scrappy. Early days of my career as a photographer, I was scrappy and I hustled. I built relationships. I was out there meeting people. I was at every business after five. I was in BNI at the time. I did BNI for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a lot of time, like every Thursday morning for 2 hours. It's a huge time investment. But like the relationships that I built there and the depth that I went into and the referrals that I got through that were so valuable. Now, I didn't get them after my first year. That's the mistake that so many of us make is like we expect, okay, good, I did that meeting. So where's my referrals from it? Or I did that. I met with this one florist, or I met with this one vendor. I'm just going to start raking in the referrals. It's like, no, it's not going to happen that way. So I say like investing because truly it's something that you have to just keep doing and doing and doing. It's almost like this idea, and I've talked about this on Clubhouse a ton. I've written about it too. It's this theory called the paradox of the growing heap. So it's in this book, and I'll give full credit, Gretchen Rubin, Better Than Before, fantastic book. If anyone hasn't read it, I highly recommend it. But so this theory called the paradox of the growing heap, it goes like this. It says, if I were to give you a coin, one coin, $1 today, would you say that you're rich? The answer is no, one coin does not make you rich. If I were to give you another coin, would you say that you're rich? Well, the answer is no. If I were to give you another coin, would you say that you're rich? The answer is no. But if I were to give you coin after coin after coin, day in, day out, and keep giving you coins, at some point, if I ask you the question, you will say that you're rich. But it wasn't one coin that made the difference. It wasn't one coin that tipped the scales and all of a sudden made you rich. But instead, it was the sum of coin after coin after coin after coin that eventually did make you rich. Yeah. And the interesting thing about that is that although one coin in and of itself is inconsequential, doesn't make a difference, it is the addition of one coin after one coin after one coin that does make the difference. And so that's the idea where it's like, you can't just get a gym membership, work out once and expect to be in good shape. You can't work out for a month.
Trust me,
I've tried to be in good shape. Believe me, I've tried. Yeah. It's like, I got the gym membership. Why am I not in shape? Well, it's like, well, you haven't gone to the gym yet. Oh, right. There's that thing. But that's the idea here, right? It's like, it's about investing. I think that's the best foundation that you can build is just to like, you're going to have to put in the time. It's not going to come easy. It's not going to come quick, and it's not going to come without effort, without sacrifice. And I don't say that to be like a downer about this. You know, I'm like not meaning to be like the grumpy photographer that's like, you got to put in your dues. But instead it's like, no, like entrepreneurship is hard work. Like it is hard work. It's so worth it. I can tell you that it is so worth it. It is so beautiful to be able to design the life and the career and the path that you follow. And I can tell you firsthand that like the life that you can live and the career and the path you can follow being a photographer, if that's the path that you want to follow, is so rewarding. Like it's just so wonderful. And I tell this all the time, but like my wife has been a stay-at-home mom with our three kids for 8 years because the money I made with my camera. My wife and I paid off our home, our mortgage, because of the money I made with my camera. My wife and I own our vehicles. We can vacation when we want. We can buy the things that we want. I can get the latest computer or iPhone, whatever the heck I want to buy, because of the money I made with my camera. All those things because of the money I made with my camera. So like the rewards of being an entrepreneur are beautiful, but it takes work to get there. And the early days are always the hardest days. So that's just like, if you can go in okay with that, like you're better off than 95% of the photographers out there, because so many of us want those quick wins and we don't want to put in the work. You know, I say if everyone wants success, no one wants to put in the work that success requires.
Sure. Oh, that is such a strong sentiment there. I feel like I have so many things that I want to bring up and talk about when it comes to that, because I mean, you're right in the sense that like, that's all that photography really is. You know, I mean, you can go out and you can go to a park and you can take a nice photo, but you're not going to do that like day one, right? And if you do, like it's on auto mode. And then did you really create that photo or did the camera create that photo? You know, so if you get to the point to where you can take a great photo, that took a long time. You had to invest in yourself to learn how to do that. And then why should it be any different with the business side of things? If you go out and you book like one awesome bride, like that's cool. That's awesome. but I want to see where you're going to be a year from now.
Yeah.
And how are you going to do that? Except for, as you were saying, you know, continue to invest in yourself and build those relationships. That was a masterclass right there is what that was. Like if somebody's listening to that and if they took away one thing from this episode, I hope that it's that and the importance of everything that you just said there. So thank you so much for sharing your experience in that.
Of course.
I wanted to ask because oftentimes photographers, you know, they listen to us as we're just talking. Sometimes we talk about gear and we talk about all these nice new things, and oftentimes new photographers just don't have the gear or the resources that most professional photographers do. So can you tell me maybe early on in your career, maybe a time where you really just had to make do with what you had to get a job done, even though it wasn't maybe the best possible way to do it, you still made it work?
100%. So I will say perfectly confidently that whatever gear you have right now to the listener, whatever gear you have is all that you need right now. And I say that with such belief because it's so easy to be chasing the gear. And look, I get it. I feel it too. And quite honestly, I love buying gear. I really do. But, and I say this with a huge but, huge caveat, I'm able to because I can afford it. Mm-hmm. Because photography is and has been my career and my livelihood. So, and I've achieved the financial success in my photography business to be able to say, if I want to get that camera, I'm going to get it just because I want to play around. Now, as a side note, my passion and obsession is film now, so the cameras are much more affordable to get now as opposed to buying like the latest Sony or Canon or Nikon or whatever, but I digress. You know, whatever it is that you have, like cameras today, even the most like simple, the most basic of cameras are so much more advanced than anything we had, even top of the line 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like the $600 camera today is better than the $6,000 camera 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And if photographers were successful with like top of the line 5 years ago, damn well sure you can be successful with bottom of the line today. So I guess I say that to say like, don't chase the gear. Don't look for more gear. Learn whatever you have. It doesn't matter what you have because the camera only does what you tell it to do. And so the camera itself is not going to make a difference in the photographs that you make. The most important part, and I forget who it was. It may have been Ansel that said this, but the most important part of the camera is the 6 inches behind it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Us, right? You. And so don't worry about whatever you have. If you have a kit lens, perfect. If you have a Rebel, awesome. If you have whatever you have is perfect. If you don't have a flash, no problem. Like learn with what you have and it will probably bring you a few years of growth as a creative. Once you start to feel the actual limitation of that gear, when you're like, no, I literally couldn't get this without this next lens or whatever it is. That's when you start to consider. But I'm almost willing to bet that like most of us are not there. Even myself, like I'm right now. I shoot Fuji. Quick side note: I shoot Fuji. I've got the 56 f/1.2 and I've got the 50 f/2 weather sealed, and I have both for a reason because I use them for different things. Now the 50 f/1 came out, and it's like, oh, I'm thinking, yeah. Oh heck yeah, 50
and
f/1.
It's weather sealed.
I'm all about the 50 f/1. I'm all about the f/1. I'm just weather sealed, beautiful. Okay, bokeh. All right, the bokeh balls are like 0.00001 millimeters bigger, so it looks a little bit more sexy if you do a direct side by side studio comparison, which we never do, by the way. So I'm trying to justify whether I just sell both those lenses and get the one. And yeah, I mean, like that's easy to justify. Wow, you know, I probably would save a little bit of money and then we go through these stories. I don't need it. I'm not gonna make a difference. I don't need it. Will I do it because I want it? Maybe, but I'll only do it because I can afford it, not because I'm not gonna go and get a loan for it. I'm not gonna go and like, you know, not pay myself this year because I need to make that move. And I do see that. I see so many photographers that are like they don't pay themselves because they just keep spending money on gear. And it's like, man, if you're if you look at your chart of accounts at the end of the year, and if you've spent more on gear than you've paid yourself, there's something wrong. Right?
Sure. So,
I guess all that just to say, like, don't worry about the gear, man. Like, just do whatever you can, shoot with whatever you have. If you have an iPhone, use that, learn on that. You can probably spend a few years mastering the art of photography on just your iPhone. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you're going to go shoot a wedding with it, but it's like, we're talking about that growth, right? As an artist, as a creative, and then as an entrepreneur, you can get pretty darn far with like the simplest gear. So don't chase gear.
I was in the same boat as you with the 56 1.2. And then I realized that just like the size of it, I didn't want to use it like around the house and just photograph my kids. Yeah. 'Cause it was just kind of big and cumbersome. And then I played this game with myself that was like, I could get the two, but is it going to be as good? You know, how right. much light am I going to be losing? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I mean, none of that stuff matters. It's like, no. It's like 2/3 of a stop that you're losing. It's not much at all. No. And then it's much smaller. And the fact that now I just shoot more with that 50mm F2. And even though on paper, it's a technically inferior lens, it's nowhere near as good as that 56 1.2. It enables me to shoot more, which ultimately is what That's we it. Want as photographers, yep. right?
100%.
So as long as you got what you need to shoot, that's all that you want. Now, I want to get back to this whole film thing that you're doing right now, because as you said, you know, you've been shooting for 15 years. You've been doing this. Now that you picked up this film camera, I want to know, like, what is there a goal to it? Is it strictly a creativity thing? And if it is, what are you trying to express? Does any of this make sense? Because once again, on paper, there's no reason why we should.
Sure.
Be
no, 100%. Yeah. 100%. I mean, and this is the funny part is like my trajectory or the path has, if you follow all of it so far, I mean, I got into it because I wanted to be a business person, not because I wanted to be a photographer, right? Like, you follow all of it, it's literally like ass backwards from what like mm-hmm. you would typically mm-hmm. do. So I, at the time when I first discovered film, which is about 2 years ago, I had never shot film before. Never. Like, even, I mean, maybe when I was a kid, I'd grab my parents' point and shoot, but it was never shooting film.
Never
right?
with intentional.
Yeah. I've never shot with film. So it's like, yet at the time for 13 years, every single time I had shot, every time I had picked up my camera outside of like just documenting my kids, I'm being paid to do it. Like, I'm being paid to be a photographer and I'm always shooting for other people. Now, I built my business to a point where I got to shoot what I wanted to shoot and how I wanted to shoot, and people paid me handsomely for it. So that's great. And I'm very grateful and thankful for that. But I never had this opportunity to like explore photography for me. Never, mm-hmm. never. I've always been a full-time professional photographer. The camera is what puts food on the table. And so when I first got like this like little intrigue of film, I was like, oh, this is different. This is like, and then just like having a camera and like being intentional by choosing a film stock and then physically loading it into a camera and just this whole like mechanical process with, you know, winding the film and doing all these things. I develop all my film too. I do darkroom printing myself too. So doing all these things.
You dove right in.
Oh, I mean, dove right in. but like being involved in a very tactile way gives me a different way to see, learn, express through photography that I'd never had before. I'd never explored that before. And then even going beyond that, like the story, like the permanence, the story of shooting on film, you know, this idea that like when you press the shutter, this piece of emulsion changes forever. Like it forever is impacted by the light that exists in this very, you know, split second of a moment. It's 1/500th of a second. This piece of film changes physically changes, never to be undone. And then you can make something real out of that, all the way up to like printing in a darkroom, and you see this thing appear in front of you and you're like, I made this, like free of technology, like free of computers and bits and bytes and zeros and ones. Like, I made this with light, with a piece of light, and this will never ever be undone. Like, that is just a beautiful way of like seeing what we do. And so I'm not doing it for clients right now. I mean, I've done it. I've actually had quite a number of clients that have like seen my own exploration of it on the personal side. And they're like, yeah, we want you to shoot film for us. Which is like cool because it's now seeing a side spill into like my professional work. But I'm just doing it for fun and because mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it gives so many other ways to explore. I mean, like you can buy cameras for like a couple $100s, like really good film cameras for a couple $100s.
Yeah.
And they're a freaking blast to play with. So like, it's great. It fulfills a different side of me, that I otherwise just didn't have digitally.
It's interesting hearing you say that because I hear new photographers speaking about their brand new entry level digital cameras in that same way. Like, oh, it's yeah. this new creative passion, because oftentimes, you know, when you get that camera, you're not coming from a world of creativity,
right.
which you have. So yeah. I love hearing that passion come back into you and that excitement.
Yeah, 100%.
That is so much fun.
That's it though, right? Raymond is like, it reignited this fire that I have, because I've been a full-time professional photographer for 15 years. It reignited this fire that, like, admittedly, after 15 years, like, not that I got tired of photography, it's not that I felt uninspired, because I love what I do and I love to photograph for my clients, but like, for my own creative pursuit, it yeah. reignited that amateur mindset again in me.
Yeah.
And I haven't had that in 15 years. So it's been such a joy to continue to explore that.
Very cool. Well, Brian, side note, when I was doing research for this episode, I realized that you're the only Brian who's ever been on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
Yes.
So on top of this huge list of accolades that you have for yourself, now you can add that to it as well. But before I let you go, can you let those listening right now know where they can find you? Because as you said, photographer, you also host a podcast, 450 episodes. Congratulations on that, as well as running Sprout Studio. So can you just let people know where they can learn more about you? And,
for sure.
And everything that you do.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Raymond. A couple places, I guess. If you want to learn more about Sprout, then you can go to getsproutstudio.com or just Google Sprout Studio. You'll find us. If you want to dive more into the business education that we have, if you go to that same website, we have a community button at the top of the page. You can dive into podcasts. We have courses. We have pricing calculators. We have hundreds of articles on anything you can think of to do with the business of photography. So you can hop in there. If you like podcasts, which you do,
they do.
You're listening to a podcast right now. then you can just find us. It's called The Business of Photography. You can find us pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. That's, I guess, mostly if you want to connect on Clubhouse. If you're on Clubhouse, that's like the coolest and latest obsession. So come find me over there.
Every time, man, I love talking to Brian. He is so knowledgeable and insightful. And I think that where he came from in photography and how he started really gives him an interesting perspective as to how to make it as a professional photographer and learn photography. I mean, you heard from the guy. He is a master at photography. And I think my biggest takeaway was because of all that, it was just so cool to hear, you know, his progression and how he got started with the business side of things, helping out another photographer, and then eventually taking over that business or starting a new business. And then he got into photography for the business. And then it's not only till now where he's really realizing, oh my gosh, I can go out and just do personal projects and shoot on film and experiment and do these new things. And, you know, hearing how photography can be so creative and fulfilling to somebody as experienced and, you know, technically minded as Brian, just brings home that, you know, photography really is something special. You know, I think that oftentimes we get into photography to create these beautiful images, and then very quickly we think, oh, but I can turn this into a business, and then the business side gets overwhelming, and then unfortunately for many, it gets so overwhelming that, you know, you grow to, you know, hate or even resent your camera. And to hear the exact opposite for Brian has just been fantastic to hear. I would love to hear your biggest takeaway. Be sure to share it in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. Again, just search Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast and you can join in on the conversation. So that is it for this episode of the podcast. Until next week, I want you to stay safe. I want you to go out and shoot and continue to stay safe. All right, that's it. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.